This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 14th of February, 1958. The title of this lecture is Responsibility for Mock-ups, Question and Answer Period. This tape is 37 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape begins abruptly, as did the original master recording.
I don't see it takes a clear to validate a clear.
Not true. You've had three examples of it right here in this unit.
I didn't mean to audit one.
Yeah, but it takes a clear to validate a clear. No, you don't have to lay down much of an artificial stress on this. There is such a thing as a clear check sheet. And if an auditor thinks he's got a clear on his hands, he ought to send for the clear check sheet. After all of the tests are available to any individual auditor. He can send for them. He can do them. He can even send them back for correction. It would be expected that the person's APA and IQ test would be included in the clear sheet request. And I see no reason why the auditor who does the job shouldn't be the one answering your question very flatly.
Thank you.
Some people will be alarmed about this, but I am not. An HCO could always issue one. In this case, by the way, to be the HCO secretary, the HCO board of review, or the HCO secretary. Now that the HCO secretary is gone, I can say I never have an HCO secretary around who isn't a crackerjack of an auditor. I find out they have to do more auditing in 10 minutes than anybody you ever saw on the job. Staff streams by in a mad rate. People come in with tears puddling all over the carpet. Just been shot. HCO secretary's life is very random, I can assure you. Almost as random as a technical director's. HGC pre-clears, by the way, will be given a clear bracelet. But that's only because it can well afford it. I tried to get these bracelets, by the way. I tried to get some kind of a price, which would be a dollar and a half or something like that, but it was junk. Junk. About the cheapest you can get a piece of jewelry for, and then handle it and engrave it and so forth, is up in the teens of dollars. This thing that's coming as a clear bracelet is gorgeous as a piece of jewelry. Oh, no kidding. It even comes in a jewel box. And the ladies is a very small chain, and the plaque on the ladies' bracelet is much smaller than the man's. But nevertheless, that's quite a solid piece of metal. It's sterling silver, but it's sterling silver with cadmium, 0.04, I guess, percent not pure. And that 0.04% is cadmium, and
pure silver is too soft.
Well, this is tougher than the ordinary sterling. Because the links wear right in half. I know I wore an Explorers Club bracelet through the war. And about halfway through the war, I was fortunately sitting at the wardroom table when it happened. The thing just fell off my wrist. I took it ashore to a jeweler, and he had to build all the links back together again. Its links, particularly next to the plaque, had just come in half. Yes, ma'am. Any jeweler can adjust it, but if you're here when you receive it, the place that is making them, which is the biggest jeweler here in this area, and so forth, all you have to do is walk in there, and he'll take off or add links, as many as you want. That was definitely part of the arrangement. I used to wear one of these things soldered on, by the way. Never did take it off. This one, just by accident, still has its clasp on it.
When do you expect these bracelets to be available?
They will be available in exactly 3 weeks. And I said exactly 3 weeks. Let me amend that. Absolute maximum 3 weeks. I told him to put the time in on making precise dies.
And he could have gotten them here in a week, but they would have been a sloppier bracelet. 3 weeks, exactly. It takes 2-3 days to get one of the things engraved with your name on it.
It seems to me the business of randomity between the, quote, field orders and the, quote, staff order, or the organization, is a matter of the field order individuating from the organization due to some consideration of inability to contribute.
Possibly. I think that this has been to a large degree economic. I mean, I think it has not been able to use that many people. And, I mean, it's just an economic thing. I mean, I think that was what happened from the beginning. Hmm?
That is contribution.
That's, so there's a contribution the other way, too. It was an economic contribution. In times of scarcity, you get an every man for himself sort of a situation. And I think that was probably, as ugly as that is, I think that was probably the basic on it. Because in 1950, I think there were very few people that, or in England in the early days, and probably very, very few people that wouldn't have happily just gone on working with a central organization. Had there been enough cash to keep body and soul together. I don't know why it takes cash to put the two together. A very close investigation of it has demonstrated that it is mystery. And you don't suppose cash is mystery, do you? Yes.
Well, the way the cash in this country is put together is certainly a mystery.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. Right now, we have a situation where it's rather difficult to get people in the central organizations. It's rather difficult. We actually have to pick them up and put them together and put them in shape and so forth. But that's mainly because we follow this policy. This policy might interest you because it is more than a policy. It is something we will not do otherwise than just now. We have found that it doesn't matter where the person is placed in the organization, with the exception, perhaps, of a typist. A person must be a good auditor. It isn't a matter of having all Scientologists in the central organization. It's a matter of having good auditors. And we found out that a person who is a good auditor will be able on almost any other post. This is quite a wild one. To be as pervasive as it has become. As a result, you have a lot of good auditors in the central organization who aren't auditing. You have some real good auditors in London, here. John's a bearcat as an auditor, for instance. Here he is sitting over in London as association secretary. And there was a very fine auditor and a very fine instructor, one of the very, very best. He was sitting there as association secretary. He's now down in Africa. One of the happiest things that he found in South Africa, of course, was the fact that he didn't have enough business to occupy all of his time compared to the London organization. And he suddenly grabbed a hold of a preclear. Slurp, slurp. And he started auditing. And there was nobody around to tell him he couldn't. And he busily and happily took one of the earlier clear sheets, and he was walking somebody up toward clear. Instead of getting administrative reports, I began to get a flood. Daily report error letters on the terrific things he was doing with his pre-clear. See, just all rave notices, you know. And I realized what was happening there. The individual's basic goal, of course, was to make people better. And he was off the paper chain. Very, very happy about it. You don't find a person who can't audit well being able to function well in a Scientology organization. It's quite weird. Quite weird. It wouldn't have been the sort of a coordination that the Army would have made. The Army says that a good doctor, of course, has to be cared for like a scurvy pup or something. And they put administrators in the hospital. Do the same thing in the Navy. They have a whole series of ranks that are merely administrators. And these administrators are hanging around the fringes, keeping the hospitals running and so on, while the doctor's merely doctor. So we're in a different field entirely. It's probably true for the Army or the Navy, you see, but it's not true for Scientology.
Yes. This also turned up a few years ago in engineering firms. They found that for darn near any job in an engineering firm, an engineer could do the job better than a non-engineer.
That's right. That's right.
It's a point of interest. They don't do that in the Royal Navy now.
What do they do now?
Come back and squash that.
Oh, yeah?
Every single man who is a man, as opposed to an NCO or an officer, is in bell bottom and jumper. Mm. And he's a sailor. He could take turn of the gun, whether he's a typist or sick brother lieutenant or what he is. He's a sailor. He's going to run that ship.
Be the only way you'd ever get anywhere.
It's really killed it up.
Yeah. Too bad we didn't have that here during the war.
With this bulletin on February the 13th, what happens to that present time problem process? What part of that problem can you be responsible for?
I'm sorry if that bulletin gave the impression that that was dropped. Doesn't the bulletin say it handled, you handle the present time problem?
It mentions problems of comparable magnitude and tells in brackets. It doesn't mention the other one at all.
Well, I am sorry. This will require something. You know what most of these HCO bulletins come from? A pack of profiles come in, and I look these over, and I see where goofing is occurring. And from an ACC, I see where people are sliding or see some specialized piece of information they need. This, you could still get away with this just the way it is written, but this is not a procedure. You handle a PT problem just as you always did. But if the person had one, the terminals of it are still a problem. Remember, you only handled the problem. See? What part of that problem could you be responsible for, you said. You didn't handle the terminals, did you? Now it finds out that when we start to run help, the case will again hang up on the PT problem because these terminals are still randomity. Do you understand that? You handle a PT problem this way. You say, do you have a present time problem? The fellow drops. He says, yes, I do. I'm being sued. You say, all right. Now, what part of that problem could you be responsible for? And he finally orients this. Well, it disappears as a bop on the meter. Now we go into help. Oh, we merely eradicated a problem, didn't we? But there are a couple of people on Earth that he would rather shoot than help. You got that? Now, as long as that state of mind obtains, you have a couple of nice, juicy terminals that are going to get in your road and running help. This was based, by the way, on an HGC preakler who wouldn't unwind or unravel. We ran... What part of the problem could you be responsible for? And we got this all damped out, and then we started to run help. We found out the preakler wouldn't run help, but he was running help with a high generality, and he would just yap. And it just was not true, and he was going out of session. He was trying to blow, and so on. And I finally got hold of this one, and I says, now, wait a minute. You got rid of the problem this man was having with his wife and her lover. But you certainly have not gotten rid of wife or lover as terminals. Why don't you turn around and run wife and lover as help? Brackets. Almost blew the guy's head off. And he was hung up right there. And as soon as he got those two people cleared up on help as terminals, he sailed in and cleaned up the rest of help, and he's now running right on down through the line. You know, it is one thing simply to observe that a present time problem hangs up a case. But I'm reporting to you simply an observation. There's no explanation for this. See, I've known this for several years. There's been no explanation for it. The explanation is this. The individual on the PT problem is hung up on help in the material universe on one or more terminals. That he won't. So his case doesn't progress. He sits there, and every time the case veers around toward this person, he comes off of it at once, and he won't have anything to do with that section of his life, you see. And he keeps flinching, and the case tries to run around this thing. Well, this is the explanation for it. You can run the problem, and you better had run the problem. Have you got a present time problem? And the fellow says, yes. Well, you better run it. What part of the problem are you going to be responsible for? A problem of comparable magnitude to it, or any other way you want to handle this present time problem, since nobody's telling you how to handle a present time problem beyond giving you all available ways of handling it. Now, you start to clear help on him, and you notice that this is rules governing the running of CCH0B help. Well, at this stage, when you start to run that, this should have said, if the PC had a PT problem, which the auditor had to clear up, got that, then he should select the most intimate terminals on these and run help in brackets, a few commands in each bracket. Just to make sure that these people aren't any longer hung up. Do you understand that? The person, the case can hang up because a problem is there, and then can hang up because the terminals are there that he would rather kill than not. Yes?
Do you always run that, what part of that problem could you be responsible for without terminals? Just using the word problem?
Oh, you can run that. That's a limited run. His havingness will chew up like mad, but you can still run it. I see what you're hung up on. You don't want to run a condition. And you have been thoroughly told, coached, and you believe that you must never run a condition, that you must always run a terminal. Now, I'll tell you something. Auditing is something you get away with. That is what auditing is. And for a little while, now listen to me, for a little while, before the havingness button gets too thoroughly chewed, you can always run a condition. But if his havingness button is chewed right at the beginning, you're going to have trouble. So you could say, to be safe, always run a terminal, never a condition. That's a safe look, don't you see? But you can get away with an awful lot. You can get around the edges of this thing and sweep at it. How else would you ever undo an axiom? You know, you can take all of the axioms and just tear them to pieces. One right after the other. A datum of incomparable magnitude to the definition for space. That's running a condition, isn't it? You're liable to get the fellow up along the line somewhere, and all of a sudden you'll have some space. You've shaken up the definition. The definition is right there in the preclear. You got all these rack of axioms. You could take them from the bottom to the top or the top to the bottom. You could actually, but as you go up toward the top, you get more and more conditional. And then when you run into the fact of a theta, you say, give me a datum of incomparable magnitude, and then a datum of incomparable magnitude to a theta. Uh-oh. This is a murderous operation. It is just totally inoperative. It is not something that would work, that is all.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
But you can say a datum of comparable magnitude on almost any other axiom and get somewhere, providing you didn't strain at it. You'll get somewhere for maybe 45 minutes. Case will feel fine. You shake them by the hand, get off of it, get away from it, run something that has a little havingness connected with it, and you never notice the difference. Run it maybe for an hour and a half or 2 hours or something of this nature. Case all of a sudden goes grog and wog and wiggle and agitate, and two or three ridges collapse on him, and you've had it then. Now how are you going to dig him out of this one? Well, you just have to wait 3 days and try over again. That's what I always do. Okay. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
I'm glad the question came up because you realize that although auditing runs safely on fixed rules, an auditor can be a reckless driver. He can still get around a few curves. Yes?
How would you phrase help the question on a creature who has a stuck flow through trying to help the person who failed when they died? How would you run that bracket?
I'd handle it the same way as any other bracket. I don't see anything special about it.
The person has been dead 20 years. You say, how do they help you?
Oh, sure. Good. Well, he'll say that for 40 times and then come up with one. You could do a lot of things with that. You understand? You always got a lot of answers to it. You could sit down and run the secondary of the person's death. That's one thing you could do. Another thing, you could just have him mock up the person, mock up the person, mock up the person, mock up the person. All of a sudden, something else would blow on the thing, you know. That'd be another answer to the same problem. Another thing is just to persevere with what you're doing or lead him in a little bit, make it conditional. Well, if they were still alive, how could they help you, you know? You remember, a thetan is always in a time called a thetan's time. See, only if you couldn't call it a thetan's time because he's just not in a time stream. So that any facsimile that he has the time tag of now on it. Then later on gets altered and has the time tag of then on it. And you get this sort of thing. Every once in a while, a fellow cheats. They get deja vu. He knows he's been there before. He knows he's done this exact thing. He knows this circumstance, this moment is happening once more. He cheats, in other words. He thinks it's happening over again, but that isn't what it is. He merely has a terrific knowingness on what is happening. British movie, the fellow gets invited to a party, and he knows horrible things are happening. The thing keeps running this idiotic cycle through and through and through. For instance, I have an interesting gimmick. I sometimes have to consciously concentrate to watch the nowness of a television screen. Because it is much, much too easy, since the whole program's in existence anyhow, it's much too easy to look at the will-be-ness of the television screen, don't you think? Much too easy. Or it's very, very easy to read the back of a book before you read the front of it, as you start to read the front of it, you know. Say, what's this all about? Well, you have to localize yourself very precisely in time. See? You say, now I am reading this book now, and it is 2:02 on this date of February the 13th, and this is the beginning of the book. It's almost by postulate that you see now. So an individual answering a question about a person who's been dead, you see, is actually running the thenness of his deadness too thoroughly, and the whole engram is in there with the nowness of the deadness. You know, that was why Dianetics, that was one of the things Dianetics took apart. It was happening now, and you told the preacher to go back on the track. What is interesting was that was an incorrect command. Actually, the track had to go up on the preacher. Yes?
Would there be any possible value on helping the preacher to get mock-ups of running a control type process, something on the order of, you get the idea of making a mock-up you can see?
Yeah, interesting. Oh, yes. I can turn on somebody's mock-ups with an awful wham on this one. Get the idea of making a brilliant mock-up. I get the idea that would spoil the game and decide not to. They'll turn on mock-ups that are... That, by the way, was the critical process which told us that ability was never lost. Unwillingness was gained, but ability was never lost. and they'll turn out mock-ups. You can even say this to a preclear who was the blackest black five you ever saw, and you, but the shock is so great you have to audit him for shock. And that is, say, get the idea of not putting a mock-up out in front of you, and a mock-up will appear. This is all reversal processing. Try not to be 3 feet back of your head, you know. Yes?
I'd like to ask whether you think that clearing the word help in the sense of definition, as we did in the PE courses, would pick up a group that's kind of snarling at each other.
A group? Yeah. Oh, yes, I think that would be a terrific idea. That's a very interesting idea, clearing help for a group. I could say something about clearing help individually on individual auditing. You know that if you clear carefully each word of the command separately, all by itself, all the way through, every time you bridge, you really shake this case up, and you find out somewhere along the line his definitions for these words begin to shift. And I have been doing this lately with considerable profit. And I finally got a person who was giving me a dictionary definition of help to actually look at the word. That was quite a triumph. The person says help, well, that's just help, and so on. And somebody helps you. That was his definition for help, which I think was very cute. I let him get away with it. And after we'd run it for a little while, he says, help. That means if somebody is sick, you do something for them. I knew we'd get to that sooner or later. That's help. He finally came out with a definition for help.
Yes. The other day, talking about running flows on help, you said you would change when you got the wide swings.
Yeah.
And as you continued going through the bracket, these wide swings would narrow down until they approached. No, now should we run it till it's has come back so that it is pretty nearly null again, or while it's still swinging very widely?
Well, I just keep running it wide. After a while, it won't swing at all. It doesn't go down to a null. It just goes down to a no react.
Well, to less and less swing.
Yeah. Well, it just doesn't act anymore. You keep holding up your hand as though the needle is registering something. The needle no longer registers. You get the idea? So it could swing or not swing or rise or not, and all of these would be just the action that what you're doing now with the preclear has no relation to the needle. And that's what you run him to. Now, if you wanted to define that as null, and you wanted to say that the needle was being set for body resistance at that point, yes, you'd get a needle. You see what I'm making here? I'm just cautioning you against assuming the idea of help is now doing anything at all with the needle. What it does is just swing it wider and wider and looser and looser, and after that it just settles down to being the simple resistance of the body on the meter. See, the actual thing about it is it gets wider and wider and then goes off the meter. And that you still have a reading, however, is no longer a reading on help.
One other question, this most intimate terminal on the sheet, what's the intimate?
To the problem. Let's say his problem of common magnitude is the fact he's getting divorced on Tuesday. Most intimate terminal will be the wife, of course. Let's say that he'd been fired yesterday. The most intimate terminal is the boss, or the person who fired him. See?
Then would it be necessarily the one nearest the present time?
Yeah. You'll find the fellow will comb back onto other bosses, other wives, the tremendous number of wives that men have had and the tremendous number of husbands that women have had make marital relations quite complicated, you know. But you're Q&A-ing with the bank if you take another one. And you shouldn't Q&A with a bank. You can go right on down and trace this thing clear back to 1000 B.C., you know. Almost every time a person lives, he gets married. If he lives long enough. Oh, yes, there sure was. Yeah, you're allowed to run into that. Run into almost anything.
And practically all of these volunteer deals on that track, too. Won't you help us?
Oh, yeah. You can always count on this factor, that any time you had a road which led out of the morass, somebody used it to go in. The greatest argument against putting a good highway to Alaska was the fact that it could be used to come from Alaska to the U.S. by tanks, which otherwise would have had a hell of a time getting here. Get the idea? So any time you had men of ill will, or Thetans of ill will, you could be absolutely sure of two things. One, that they would use any button which would have freed to trap. And the other, that they weren't around very long and got quickly trapped. Yep. You can be sure of those two things. The second is very gratifying.
This brings up a point here. You mentioned the other day that ability goes along with willingness to help.
Mm-hmm.
There seem to be some apparent variances.
I wouldn't even try, beyond saying that the ability of the man that was left, the ability of the man that was still apparent, that was still functional, was only a small portion of the actual ability he could have exerted. I would say here you had somebody who was practically in a clear state, who was in no understanding at all, whose understanding was very poor, and whose hates overrode his good sense. And the faster they overrode it, why, the quicker he went down the slot. Yes?
One thing that hasn't been cleared up on this, this Pacific Universe terminal, they use the entire nine-way bracket, nine-step bracket on the Pacific terminal?
Yes. Sure. You don't have to. That's actually banging it around too much.
Yeah,
you've got a five bracket that still works just fine. You can even get away with a three bracket, you know. It's what you can get away with, you know. If the fellow seems to be having difficulty with it, and he's struggling with it and so forth, then it's the time you pour on the coal. Then you say, well, we'll just run this nine ways. And get it really cleaned up. Take some guy whose father, for instance, sent him through school, whose father gave him all of his money, whose father stopped him at every turn, you know, so he could help him and so forth, and he's having a hell of a time. Yeah. Now we run, how could father help you? And he gets a brrr automatic. How could you help father? And he goes into a total decline. Right away we would say, father, aha, nine-way bracket, if you please. We'll beat this one to death. Get the idea?
Thank you.
You bet.
If you ran Not No Union Station on a recent clear, what would you expect?
Oh, I'd expect that he would probably enjoy the novelty of it, and it would probably flatten rather rapidly.
But. Real fast comment on this health thing. Apparently, calm lag by itself is not an indication of stickiness. This is something we came up with.
Interesting, isn't it?
One level of con lag was definitely stickiness. There just were no ways around. And another level of con lag was, one at the higher level, was looking at the individual, saying what his goals were and whatnot. And sure, with a certainty there was a way to help, but an increased knowingness of the individual. And it was apparently a fairly free needle there, although the con lags were something fairly wrong.
Yeah.
The non-preacher can tell what the needle's doing, too.
Yeah. Should be able to. Mm-hmm. Yes? Would taking dianazine make for faster progress? The answer is no. Dianazine has been found to slow down auditing, not speed it up. Rather violent. Dianazine moves engrams up and down and around and about and so forth. Well, if you're going to take B1, you will have to take calcium and ascorbic acid with it. If you do not take those two with B1, you won't have any bones after a while. And that the chemical industry has not found this out tells us that they're not as serious as they might be about what they're doing.
Well, would it help to take those three?
For 55 minutes of a session, you get a faster, more alert run anytime you take some B1 at the beginning of a session. Anytime Preclear begins to have nightmares while he's being audited, he should be fed some B1 if you feed him some B1. At the rate of every 50 milligrams of B1, he must have a minimum of 20 to 25 grams of dicalcium phosphate and must have a minimum of 250 milligrams of ascorbic acid. He must have that. And if you give that in that proportion, his nightmares will cease and desist.
That's been my problem.
Yeah, well, you just take all you want of it, but of course that tells you that if you take, I'm not prescribing for you, I'm telling you the chemical reactions of this. If you take 100 milligrams of B1, you have something between 30 and 50 grains of dicalcium phosphate and somewhere around 500 milligrams of C. And that's getting to be a real horse pill. You know about the fellow that was given the pill by the veterinarian that he was supposed to give the horse, and he couldn't get the horse to take the pill, so the veterinarian gave him a big tube. He's supposed to put this tube in the horse's mouth and take the pill, and he's supposed to blow the pill into the horse's mouth. The fella came back the next day looking very ill. The veterinarian says, did you put the tube in his mouth? And he says, yes. And he says, what happened? And he says, the horse blew first. On that horrible and corny joke, we will terminate this. It's been very, very, very much of a privilege to talk to you. And give you this series of lectures. I hope they've done you some good. Thank you very much.